Thank you.
I'd like a motion from the floor to bring the meeting back into session.
I'd like to move that we reconvene the session on Mr. Torres.
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Okay, we're back in session. If I can remind everyone, because we've been out for lunch, maybe you used your cell phones. If you'll please check the cell phones, put them on silent mode, or turn those off. And Mr. Willoughby, your first witness.
Mr. Hal Godwin, Deputy Administrator for Sussex County. Wherever you'd like. I think it's probably better.
Okay.
Right there.
Do you swear the witness, please?
Would you raise your right hand, please? Thank you. Do you swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? So help you God.
I do.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming today. Could you tell us your full name, please?
My name is Harold F. Godwin.
And how are you employed?
I'm the Deputy Sussex County Administrator.
And can you give us a summary of your duties in that position?
Well, among those duties, I am the fleet manager.
And tell me what the fleet manager does.
Well, it's my responsibility to see to it that our staff who require transportation have safe, dependable automobiles or trucks for that transportation.
And how long have you worked for Sussex County?
Since March of 2006.
And am I correct, the county has a GPS system for some vehicles?
Yes, sir.
Could you describe the vehicles that have a GPS system?
Currently, we have GPS transponders attached to roughly 40 automobiles and small trucks.
And are some of those transponders in vehicles that are operated by the sheriff's department?
Yes, I believe all of the sheriff's cars are equipped with such transponder.
And how many vehicles is that?
I believe it's 10 currently.
10 vehicles?
Yes.
And what other departments is the GPS used in besides the sheriff's department?
Our assessment department, code enforcement, planning and zoning, and our building department, and one section of our engineering department.
Tell me how the GPS system works.
The GPS transponder sends a signal to a satellite that then rebounds that information to our vendor, Network Fleet, who disseminates that information through a computer program to us. And this monitors all the vehicles that are so equipped. It monitors their ignition switch on and off, their speed, the location that they're in. And if there are troubled codes that the car's computer generates because of a mechanical problem, it sends that signal as well with much of the diagnostic material.
Right. So it tells you if there's a problem with the vehicle, for example.
Yes, sir.
And does it do this, you said it tells you the location, speed, whether the vehicle's on or off. Does it do this in real time?
Yes.
So as I understand, there's a computer screen that you can pull up that will show you where the county vehicles are at all times.
Yes.
Do the department heads, such as Sheriff Christopher, have access to the GPS system?
The department heads have access to the cars that are in their care.
Right. So they have access to the vehicles that are under, for the employees who work under them.
In their department. That's correct.
Yes, in their department. Okay. Tell me a little bit more about the system. I understand there's a like a signal or a code that's red, one that's blue, and one that is green.
Yes, sir.
Can you go through those for me?
Yes, red means the car is parked with the ignition off. Blue means the car is running but not moving, and green means the car is underway, it's moving.
Okay. What is the accuracy of the GPS in connection with the location of the vehicle?
It's relatively accurate. I would say that it's within a few feet of the actual location of the vehicle.
Okay, so it's a matter of feet that it, that you can tell where the vehicle is?
Yes.
Okay, and what about speed? Does it accurately give information on speed?
I have verified that the speed is within 1 mile an hour.
Okay. Were you involved in the investigation of the misconduct by Mr. Torres?
To some degree, yes.
And how did you become involved?
I verified that Mr. Torres's car, the car that was assigned to him, was actually sending and we were receiving valid information as to its location and its disposition of running or not.
Okay. So you said you verified its accuracy. Can you just take us through step by step how you did that?
Sure. On April 30th, early in the morning, it was probably 8:30 or 8:40, I called Mr. Torres at the office. He was at the West Complex, and asked him if he had any time that he could spend with me in his car that day. And he accommodated me within a couple of hours and said that he could meet me up front. So he picked me up right out front here on the circle at 10:17 a.m. that same morning. He had some papers to deliver to the court, as he explained, and could pick me up at that point. So that's where we met.
Okay, so I understand that you drove the vehicle?
Yes, I drove the car because I wanted to be sure I had certain information recorded so that I could be able to monitor that once it came through a written report on our computer.
All right, and just take a step-by-step how you verified the accuracy of the GPS.
Sure. At 10:17, I got in the car, and I turned the key off, so the car was off. I recorded the mileage of the car, and then at 10:20, 3 minutes later, I started it and left the location.
Let me stop you just 1 second. You're looking at your exhibit binder there. Are they notes of the test that you're looking at?
Yes, it's SC66 is the page.
Okay, SC66, these are your handwritten notes of the locations that you went to,
yes,
et cetera. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, tell us what you did.
So I then left the circle, Mr. Torres in the passenger seat and I driving, and we went east on Route 9, and I asked Mr. Torres where he would turn left to go home, and he told me we made that left. And we drove out Savannah Road to his home, arriving there at 10:26 a.m. We pulled in the driveway, and I shut the car off.
And why did you shut the car off?
Because I wanted to make sure that information we're getting as to whether the car is on or off was accurate, because there was some extended periods of time that the car was in Mr. Torres's driveway, and it appeared to be running. And I just wanted to make sure that that signal was accurate.
Okay. All right. So what else did you do?
At 10:30, we restarted the car, and I drove from his house to Route 113 in route back to the West Complex at the sheriff's office. So I was trying to simulate a possible trip for him to come to work in the morning, going both this way and the other way, so that I sort of covered both routes that he might be using to traverse from home to work in the morning and in the evening. So, because I wanted to have that on record.
Okay.
We arrived at the West Complex at 10:46, at which time I let the car idle for a minute or two and then turned it off at 10:46 a.m. I also checked the speed. The speed that his car told me was 49 miles an hour, and the GPS read 50. So, as I said, I'm sure they're within 1 mile an hour on the speed. We arrived at the West Complex at 10:46. I let the car idle until exactly 10:50 and turned the ignition off. I held my handwritten notes. Mr. Torres saw what I was doing, and I said, "Do you agree that this is what we just did?" He said, "Yes, I agree with that."
When you say that this is what we just did, you mean that these were the locations that you went to, the times you had the car on and off, and everything that you had done?
Sir.
And what was his answer?
He said, yes, he did. I asked him if he would sign the document, and he said he didn't want to sign it. And I said that was okay.
All right. But so he agreed, though, that everything that you had...
He had agreed that my log was accurate with the route that we had taken.
Okay. And did you compare your log, then, to a GPS report?
Yes. And it was very accurate. As I said, it picked up 50 miles an hour, and I saw 49 on the car's odometer, but that was about the only discrepancy. Everything else as far as times and locations lined right up with. Now, of course, I was using my watch, mm-hmm. so if I was off a few seconds or a minute, based, because the GPS is done electronically. Their time is accurate.
Right. So you compared the locations and the times that you had on your log to a GPS report for Mr. Torres's vehicle.
Yeah, I came back to the office and I printed out his automobile starting at 8:07 that morning down through 11:06 that morning, which I felt would more than adequately cover the time that he and I were together in the car, and it did cover it pretty well.
And it that confirmed the GPS was accurate?
To me, it certainly looks accurate, yes.
Okay. Now, did you do any other tests to confirm the accuracy of the GPS system?
Well, yes. I did one more test with a different car so it would to try and establish the fact that the entire macro system works accurately, not just one car. And on a later date, I don't have that date in front of me, Mrs. Brewington and I took another one of the sheriff cars for a ride, and we documented that trip and came back and printed out, and it also matched.
Okay, so you followed the same procedure for the second test?
Yeah, not the same route, but we did follow the same procedure. We wrote down the times, the mileage, the locations, where we drove, when we stopped, when we turned it on and off. So we went through a log of those kinds of functions to make sure that the report we got from the GPS lined up with what we actually did.
And was it accurate?
Yes.
Now, did you do anything to confirm with the vendor that the GPS reports for Mr. Torres's vehicle were accurate?
Yes, sir, I did. I sent the our GPS vendor, Network Fleet. Mr. Torres had actually driven two cars during this year. The first January and half of February, he drove a 2005 Chevrolet. So I sent the VIN number and the serial number of the GPS unit for that car, as well as the car we replaced for him when the 2005 broke down. In mid-February, he was then assigned a 2009 Chevrolet that had formerly been Deputy Lineweaver's car. That's a 2009 Chevrolet. So I provided the VIN number of that car and the serial number of that GPS to Network Fleet and asked them to verify all the reports that we had gotten. And what they sent me was a very thick paper trail, if you will, documents verifying everything those two cars have done during that period of time. So then we just took and lined that up with the reports that we had been using to verify Mr. Torres's track over the audit period.
So am I correct that they gave you a sworn statement that the GPS reports were accurate?
They did. They gave me a sworn statement that says that the information that they provided, particularly for those two vehicles, is accurate.
All right. You have some background in automotives as well, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you've heard the discussion that Mr. Torres has claimed at times that there was a battery problem with his vehicle. He said something about the alternator, being an issue. First of all, was there any report of an alternator problem with his vehicle?
Our garage did not receive any complaints about an alternator problem with either of those vehicles. As a matter of fact, I have the records here for at least the 2009. Well, I have both cars. Records of service, oil changes, repairs, road service, if there had been any. And we did replace a battery in the 2009 Chevrolet that Mr. Lineweaver gave to Mr. Torres. The car was not broke down on the road when we did that. The car came into our garage, and I guess it was Mr. Torres told Dave, our mechanic, that the car needed to be jumped a couple of times, and would he check it out? And Dave tested the battery, saw it to be weak, and replaced it on the 6th of March.
Okay, so he had a new battery in the vehicle on March 6th.
That's correct.
All right.
Now, at that time, also, he tested the alternator, because he always does that when he replaces a battery. And the alternator and voltage regulator and the entire electrical system was functioning properly.
So on March 6th, when he replaced the battery, the alternator and the rest of the electrical system was working fine.
Correct.
Now, as a layman, as I understand it, an alternator recharges a battery so it keeps the power up?
Yes.
Does it have other functions in terms of what the electronics in the vehicle?
The automobile uses enough power with the accessories as they're equipped that a car today will not run very far down the road without an alternator. If the alternator is not functioning, the battery itself alone will not carry the car very far, probably less than 2 miles.
Right. So in other words, if the alternator is not recharging the battery, the car is just draining the battery down, and it's right. The modern car is not going to run very long.
Correct.
Okay.
One more thing I should add is that with our GPS system, as I said, there's a diagnostic program in there as well, and if there had been a voltage drop or if the alternator had failed, we would have gotten a signal across the GPS information that there was an electrical problem with that car, and we didn't.
Oh, so the GPS would have told you?
Exactly.
Okay. All right, you've heard this talk of this Wilson Hill Road location?
Yes, sir.
And there's who I need, Chip. Could you put the photograph of the Wilson Hill Road location up on the screen for us, please? Okay. While he's firing up the computer and getting the photograph up, you heard the testimony about the Wilson Hill Road location showing up frequently, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you heard that there was a discussion by Mr. Torres that he was seeing a mechanic on Wilson Hill Road.
Correct.
Okay. Did you do anything to try to follow up on that information?
One of the things that we did was I drove to that location, to the address that showed up repeatedly on the GPS, to find that it was a home with a construction business, and the property next door was, in fact, an automobile repair business. So I thought that perhaps this garage, this repair garage next door, may be the one that Mr. Torres was referring to.
Okay, could you, do you mind coming down and just sort of pointing out where the garage was, or can you point to it from where you are?
Try to.
I'm asking you to navigate some tough spots there.
Let's see.
Very near.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a little close. Well, you know what? Maybe that's...
I believe this was the address that the GPS had picked up, mm-hmm. and the repair business was next door.
Okay, so you identified the repair business as being next door to the address that the GPS picked up.
The GPS was saying that Mr. Torres visited property X very regularly.
Right.
So, and he said that it was because his car had an alternator problem. At least that's what I had heard. So when I got there, I found that the property next door was an auto repair garage. I thought, well, maybe that's the place.
Okay. So did you make contact with the auto repair owner to see if by any chance he had worked on...
I did call. I identified myself and told him that I was calling because I had heard that he had either repaired or worked on one of our county's cars, and he said, no, that was not the case.
I'll just stop you for 1 second there. Would it be appropriate for Mr. Torres to have some third-party mechanic work on a county vehicle?
Well, no, not according to our policy. We repair all of our vehicles either in-house or our garage will send it to an outside vendor if it needs to go there because we can't do the work. But in our fleet policy, it explains that the county will maintain our own vehicles, so it's in writing.
All right, So when you talked to the mechanic that was located on that road, what did he tell you?
He told me that he had, in fact, not worked on any of our cars.
When you spoke with him, did he mention that he'd seen a sheriff deputy vehicle on the street?
Well, he asked me what kind of a county car was I referring to, and I said it would have been a sheriff's car. It would have been easy to identify because it would have had a sticker on the door identifying it as either sheriff or a Sussex County vehicle, and he said that he did not work on such a vehicle, but he had seen a sheriff's car at the property next door, which was the address the GPS reported.
So the GPS actually had the exact correct address.
It had the right address. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Correct. And what else did he tell you about seeing the vehicle at the next door address?
He named Mr. Torres. He said that he knew him and that he knew that he was friends with the next door neighbor.
And who was the next door neighbor? What's his name? Chris Malik, ring a bell?
Yes.
Okay.
And he said that he thought that they were acquaintances or friends or...
That Mr. Torres and Mr. Malik were friends.
Right.
Right. And did he make any comments about seeing the vehicle at that location?
He just said that he'd seen it there several times.
Okay. And is there a document in there, exhibit binder? I think it's SC81 that has the notes about that.
Yes. Yeah, that's the location.
Okay, and those are the notes about the conversation with the mechanic fellow? Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm. All right, now I want to address just one other issue. Use your help again, I think. There was some discussion this morning about the West Complex, where the sheriff's office is, and the Georgetown Middle School, and their relative locations.
Uh-huh.
We're going to put a map up there, and okay, no problem.
No, it's here. I just moved it to a different folder.
All right, so, and do you have a printout of that, Mr. Godwin?
I think I do.
So let Mickey get down again. What is the distance between the West Complex, where the sheriff's office is, and the Georgetown Middle School?
I don't know for sure.
Well, what does the map say it is?
What does the map say? 1,570
feet?
This map, that map there.
You have a different map?
15, yeah, that says 1,570 feet. That would. Yeah. I was going to say a quarter of a mile, so I'm close.
Okay. All right. Now, does the GPS have the accuracy to distinguish between those locations?
Oh, yeah, it certainly does, because when the vehicles are parked, all of our vehicles that are parked at the West Complex will show that address.
To show the West Complex.
Yeah, it'll show the West Complex.
Okay,
address.
And the address that shows up on the GPS reports for the school is not the West Complex address.
Not only that, I can tell you how close it gets. Leaving the West Complex on Laurel Street, take the first right into Cinderbury, and the second property there is where our paramedics office is.
Right.
That'll show a different address.
Okay.
That close in.
So there's no question that the Schoolhouse Lane address is not the West Complex.
Oh, no, they're different addresses by some 1,500 feet or more.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Godwin.
Ms. Murray?
Have you been advised by anyone of that all of the electronics in the vehicles bleed the batteries?
Excuse me?
Have you been advised by anyone, and I granted that's global, anybody in the sheriff's office, have you been advised by anyone in the sheriff's office that all of the electronics in the vehicles bleed the batteries?
No.
Okay. Did you receive any training from Network Fleet is the vendor, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you receive any training from them on how the GPS units work?
Training? No, just operations.
Okay. Operations of the units themselves, correct?
Well, we install them and we program them into the computer, and then we monitor the information that's delivered back from those transponders.
Okay. And so the information from the vehicles is relayed, you said, to a satellite, correct?
Right.
To a Network Fleet database.
Yes.
Is that an accurate statement?
Well, yeah, that's probably accurate. They buy a database from a private vendor.
Okay. And this database is accessed by a computer?
Correct.
Correct? Okay. And is there a special program that is used for, or is it, I mean, like, how, what computer program? Are you just going out to, like, a web address?
Yes, it's a web address,
okay.
Yes.
And do you know how to read the GPS reports?
Yes.
Okay, and so if I ask you about a particular field, you could explain them?
I'll try.
Okay.
I mean, I'll try.
All right, I'm going to approach and hand you some reports to refer to, and I'm going to identify them by date and their bait stamp number as I refer to them. I have a set for the board as well as opposing counsel. There's no new information here. This is in your record. This is really just for ease of reference.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just for clarification, I told Mr. Godwin that the top document is an enlarged picture of the stop idle report. So I'll explain them as I go through. So we're going to talk about February 27th. And I have two reports, really three because there's the blow up. One that shows stop idle time, and this is SC 53 and 54. And the other one shows activity detail. This is SC 85 to 94. You with me?
I think.
Okay.
What was the date you're...
Pardon me?
What was the date you're...
February 27th is the activity detail we're working with. Right. And the writing's very small on the stop idle report, and that's why I blew up the 227 for SC 53. Okay, so I'm going to direct you to the middle of the page just above row 1. Can you tell me what trip begin time signifies?
Well, you've tried to highlight something on here.
Actually, I didn't highlight anything. This was what was provided. So look at, do you see line 1 where it says Deputy Torres next to it? Above that.
12,
okay,
9,
yeah.
45.
Above that where it says trip begin time. What is that? What does trip begin time signify?
That's the date and the time that the trip began, the car started to move.
Okay, and then 3 columns over we have stop begin time. And that would be when the car stopped, obviously. And then under line 1A, it says stop duration. It says 19 idle stop.
Yes.
Okay, and what does that mean?
I believe that means that the car stopped twice with the engine running.
Okay.
Okay, its first stop was at 9:47, and its second and last stop before it was turned off was at 10:53.
Okay.
I think that's why, or 10:16. I'm sorry.
10:16. Okay. It took me a little while to figure it out.
That's why I said, I don't use this report that often, but it is somewhat, you have to learn how to read it. That's true.
And I've got a crash course, believe me. Trip begin time is when the car is turned on, and stop begin time is when the car is turned off. And the line underneath it is when the car is on idling but not moving. So when it says idle stop, that gives the duration of the idle stop. Do we agree?
I think that's right.
Okay. Now I want you to look up at the activity detail report. So it's the SC85. And you see that it starts at 9:46, which ties right back into this.
Okay.
And when you look at it looks like the car idled from 9:47 until around 10:05 when you look at the activity detail report. And was moving by 10:07. So you're looking at activity.
That seems correct.
Okay. So this confirms that the 19 minutes is shown on line 1A. So back to the detail report. On the second page, it shows that the car was turned off at 10:16. You're on stop idle. I see which one you're looking at stop idle. I'm on the detail report. Sorry.
Okay.
And it says that it was turned off at 10:16.
Yes.
Okay. And then back on your stop idle, it shows that that's what was reflected. You read that. Stop begin time 10:16. I'm getting to my point on this next one. Page 2 of the activity detail, the one that you were looking at, shows that the car was turned back on by 12:31.
Correct.
Okay, and that's shown as the trip begin time that says...
You're cross-footing two separate reports, but it's the same information, I believe.
It should, yeah, exactly. So where I'm going with this is when you look at the activity detail report, the car idled from 12:31 to 12:34.
Yes.
Correct? But that's not on the stop idle report. And I know why, but I'm wondering, I'm wondering if you can explain it. Okay. And basically, a filter was applied. The report shows that the minimum idle stop duration is 15 minutes. Right up at the very top, it says minimum idle stop duration, 15 minutes.
So if you stop less than that, it won't show on the report.
Correct. Uh-huh. Not necessarily a big deal, but this is where I'm going with it. Look at the top of the stop idle report, and it's probably best to use the littler one, and go from the very top, come down about 8 lines, where it says idle stops 65 and a total stop time of 1 day, 7 hours, and 27 minutes. Although I have to say, normally this would be, the 27 would be seconds, but this reads it as, so it's, it says 65, and then next to it, 01, colon 07, 27. So that would be the total time of all of the idle stops. It says idle stop, and then stop total stop time. Can I just point you to it? So, or have you found where I am?
No.
Okay.
These are mine.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll get you guys.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Who said neither have I?
Me.
Right. For one moment, sir. Right here, under my thumb, where it says one, it's tiny, tiny writing. You might see it on the blown up one better. Are we all on the same page? Okay. All right, so total idle time of all the idle stops should match the total minutes of all of the idle stops on this detail report. It's a detail report from May 27th or February 27th until March 27th. Totaled at the top. Detail should match. They don't. 1 day, 7 hours, and 27 minutes equals 1,887 minutes. I'm not submitting this as an exhibit, but I ran an adding machine tape, and it does not come out to 1,887 minutes. It comes out to 1,881. I know, not a big deal. It's only 6 minutes, but it doesn't match.
I see a total distance of 1,786.
Total distance.
I see total time, 30 days, total distance, 1,786.
Right.
And then I see maximum speed, 65.
It's above that where we're talking about, where it give, it's a recap of the detail report.
Where it says total stops, 119?
Yep, right above that, where it says 65, and it gives you a total time next
idle
to it.
Total stops, 65.
Okay, total stop
Hard
time.
Stops, 54. Huh? Okay.
Okay, so it's odd that a detail report that has a recap at the top does not match what the actual detail going down the columns are. So I've seen reports like this before, not necessarily this one, but more like the activity detail report. Are these reports exported into Excel?
I think you can, but I don't think we do that.
Okay. Are the reports editable?
No.
They are not.
No.
Okay. Let me tell you why I'm asking. There's a column on the right side of the page of the stop idle report. So please look at SC53, our stop idle report. And that column, it's on the far right-hand side, is cut off. But it looks like, from my perspective, that it says WILS and TOR.
Yeah, I don't have that. Oh, yes, I do. Just like a half a word.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Here's why I'm asking. If it's not editable, this is cut off. It looks like it says Torres and Wilson. How do Torres and Wilson get onto this report?
They do not.
Then why am I reading Torres and Wilson on the report?
They're recorded because their name is recorded to the card.
Wilson? This is 13706 Wilson Hill Road.
Oh, okay. No, the Wilson might be the driver.
Okay. So.
I'm really not sure.
Okay. Well, let's go to SC85. We're back to the detail report.
Mm-hmm.
The address. Top line says closest landmark Torres home. Mm-hmm. 19233 DE-246.
Right.
This came out of a database from Network Fleet?
Yes.
The Torres home?
I can't explain that.
Okay. None of the other addresses say this except the other address you were interested in, which is 13706 Wilson Hill Road, which is on another page. But, I mean, you could flip through and find that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here's where I'm going with it. Let's look at the next activity detail report from March 2nd. Okay, so keep that one in one hand and look at the March 2nd one. And it's the bait stamp number is SC125 to SC134. On this report, there is the same exact address that appears on the February 27th report, 19239DE-246. But it does not say closest landmark Torres home. Why?
I don't know.
Okay, so I have two reports that say activity detail that are not editable. Sometimes indicates Deputy Torres's address as closest landmark Torres home, and other times as 19239DE246.
The verifications that I got from them goes by longitude and latitude, if you'd like to see them.
But that's, I mean,
yeah. These
are legitimate questions.
Right. Okay.
Do you recall your ride along with Deputy Torres on April 30th? I believe you testified to it. Not on a report at the moment. This is actually a question, and then I'm going back to the reports. Did you tell Deputy Torres in your ride-along on April 30th that you could change information in the computer?
I did. I cannot change information in the computer.
Okay.
As far as location, any of the information that's delivered through, I cannot change. I can change the name on the car.
Okay. Is there anything else that can be changed?
When you first set a new car up, you can put in the odometer reading, and then that stays there for the life of the car.
Okay. Let's go back to the activity detail report on 227. So we are on, I'm looking at page SC86. Up at the top. I'll give you a second. Sorry. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm on 86. Did you flip the page?
86.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Do you see where the street address is missing for four entries? It just says Georgetown, Delaware, 19947.
Yeah, I think that sometimes they don't repeat the same if it's the same address, I think.
Okay. Actually, if you go five lines down from there, 22069 is repeated three times in a row.
Right.
So I'm curious how we can have missing information, we can have a missing address, further down you can have a missing city where you have DE19947. Sometimes it reads as Georgetown, sometimes it doesn't. Can you explain?
No, we cannot explain that.
Okay. Same report. Let's go to SC91. Please count up nine lines from the bottom. Nine entries, basically. And you'll see that there's a column of zeros there. Okay, those zeros are in the actual miles per hour column. So a zero would suggest the car is not moving. Would we agree? Okay, now I want you to look five columns to the left at the address. And you'll see that the address is 387 Hall Place. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, please look about three lines down. And the address is 384 Hall Place. Then another line down says 386, right?
Right.
Three different addresses while the car is idle. 0 miles per hour.
Uh-huh.
How did the car move to three different addresses without any speed?
I'm sure they're all homes that are very close to one another. You know, the next door over, the one across the street, the next door over.
Okay. They're near each other, so... Let me tell you why I'm asking. This is, each page here has at least one instance of two different addresses with 0 miles per hour. How do you change addresses without moving?
You don't.
Okay. I mean, the car is reading, the GPS is reading addresses. Okay.
This is not a guided missile. Okay. It's not GPS to that degree. It's accurate.
Excuse me. If anyone's talking, we'll ask you to leave.
No, it's not my GPS equipment, but to help you understand, I would think that it's easy for the GPS to pick up this house and possibly the next door address within a few, within this. This is a, every 2 minutes, this thing makes a ping, it sends a signal. Mm-hmm. So I can see where, 386 and 384 next door. Mm-hmm. And 387 is a house across the street. Mm-hmm. So I could see where that could be in close enough proximity under certain conditions for a GPS to pick up any one of those three at the same location.
Okay. Same report. Let's go to page 2, SC86. Second entry from the top. Look at the fourth column, which indicates whether the ignition is off or on. Do you see where I am?
Right.
What does it say?
It says off.
Okay. Now look at the second to last column from the right of the same line,
right,
which shows actual speed of the vehicle in miles per hour. What does it say?
It says 10 miles an hour. It says that when it pinged, he had just turned the car off, and the last reading was 10 miles an hour.
So the ignition is...
This is a two-minute time frame.
I understand the interval, believe me.
So within 2 minutes, you could be going 10 miles an hour and stop and turn the car off. You could do that within 2 minutes.
Okay.
The computer on the car, the onboard computer, is where the information comes from to go to the satellite. Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to explain that to me again. The ignition is off, but there's speed. Explain to me how.
It happened within 2 minutes. That's a two-minute ping.
Oops. Don't worry about it. Okay. Well, if the car is off, it's particularly significant because the ignition being off is shown on that stop idle report. The first one that we looked at, mm-hmm, we spent so much time with, where I said stop again time is when the car is turned off. Okay, time increments are calculated based on this. It reads the ignition as off, but moving. That's going to skew the data.
Somewhere during that two-minute time frame, it saw both. It saw a speed of 10 miles an hour, and it saw the key off. It saw both of those signals within a two-minute, that's 120-second time frame. Yeah, it saw that. That's the message it sent to the computer, to the satellite. That's possible.
Okay. Last report we're going to look at, the March 19th report. SC-199 to SC-208. Please turn to SC-205. Read me, and let's go three entries up. Read me the timestamps for the last three entries. So we're looking third column from the left-hand side. It has the date, and it has time underneath it. Third from the bottom.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Read the times to me, please.
Read the what?
The times. 2:13.
2:13 p.m.
2:15. 2:17. Two-minute increments, correct?
Correct.
Top of the next page should be 2:19. It's 3:06.
Well, maybe there's a page missing.
Could be.
That'd be my guess.
Okay, let's go back to SC-205 again then. And look at the second column from the right at all of those zeros. In fact, the whole page is zeros. And it continues up to the next page with more zeros. And let's look at the addresses. 7580, 7576, back and forth, okay. 7576, 7580, top of the next page, 23017 Nickel Lane.
Probably a page missing.
Probably a page missing.
No, I'm sorry, it's 319, 270, yeah. One page ends with 217, the next one starts at 306.
Okay.
So there's probably a page missing.
I think the reports are flawed.
Object or argument. Give a question or ask a question.
I thought this was informal.
It is informal. We're not here on TV to make an argument in the middle of your question.
Okay. Relatively accurate, between a matter of feet. You testified to that.
Yes.
Okay. We have multiple addresses with 0 miles per hour between them. You said that the signal across the GPS for the alternator, that there is a signal across the GPS for the alternator. Okay. Is it as reliable as the on-off sensor?
What I said was that the onboard computer tracks trouble codes with the car, mostly electronic. Those trouble codes will be transmitted through our GPS system to our printout to alert us to a mechanical problem. Okay. We saw none on that car, particularly electronic. That's what I said.
Okay. And the departments that you testified about that have the GPSs, I believe you said code enforcement, planning and zoning, building and one section of engineering, I think is what you said. Are all of the vehicles in those departments, do they all have GPSs?
I'm not sure that everyone in all of those departments do. There may be one or two. There's one loaner car that doesn't. Well, it's a loaner car in the mm-hmm. department. They use mm-hmm. it. And I think that's all.
Okay.
I think they are,
but you did testify that the sheriff's office, all of their vehicles have GPSs, correct?
Yes.
Why? I mean, why was the sheriff's office?
I can't answer that question. I was ordered to do this by county council.
By county council. Okay. I have no further questions at this point. Thanks.
All right. A couple more questions, right? Godwin, yes. So there's 40 vehicles in the fleet that have GPS systems, correct?
Yes.
And have there been any reports of any other vehicle or any claims by anyone else of any other vehicle where the location or time was not accurate on a county vehicle, other than Mr. Torres'
report
vehicle?
Report from an employee, no.
Okay. And so, and you're not aware of any report from anyone claiming of any inaccuracies in the location, timing, et cetera, of the vehicle?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right, I'm going to thank Perch, the witness. I've got a document for him. Okay. All right, I've handed you, Mr. Godwin, a document that has the columns that were cut off in the earlier report. We're going to get the rest of the copies made for council and for the personnel board. So just bear with us a minute.
What's occurring now? Are you making are copies being made?
Yes.
Okay.
explanation of what we're waiting for?
It's the report that you had, we're making copies of it, the ones with the columns not cut off, so we can read them.
Mr. Willoughby, when the copies become available, would you give your answer in the mic, please, what you just indicated?
Yeah, I'll do that.
What we're waiting for are copies of the same kind of report that was gone over on cross-examination dealing with the column that was missing. As I understand it, it's a different date because this report is several dates back, but it shows that missing column where it wasn't photocopied. Okay. So just to show that what's in that column.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. This is a report you haven't seen before, right, Mr. Godwin?
Not today.
Okay. And these reports are stop and idle time reports were run by Ms. Brewington in the investigation. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So you weren't the person working with them during the investigation, the stop and idle time reports?
Yes.
Okay. Now, am I correct that what was cut off on the column that you were shown was a statement of landmark location identification of what a shorthand, so to speak, of what the location was?
I can see now.
So
yes.
So that Wilson was Wilson Road.
Correct.
The Wilson Hill Road location, and Torres was Torres's home?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey, does the board have any questions of Mr. Godwin? If not, Mr. Willoughby, your next witness.
They call the county administrator, Todd Lawson.
I do.
Good afternoon. Could you state your full name for the record, please?
Todd Frederick Lawson.
And what is your position with Sussex County?
Sussex County Administrator.
And how long have you held that position?
Full-time, January 1, 2012.
Okay, and did you hold any position with the county before then?
Yes, I was the second county administrator, along with Dave Baker. I followed Dave from August 2011 until January 1, 2012, when I took over full-time.
Okay. And can you tell us about your educational background?
I have an undergrad from the University of Delaware in Ag Business Management and Political Science, law degree from the George Mason School of Law, and that's enough.
Okay. All right. Can you tell us about your work experience before coming to the county?
Sure. I spent 14 years in Washington, D.C., working in varying levels with the federal government, 3 years for a member of Congress, 3 years as an appointee in the Bush administration, 3 years with a law firm, and finished as a federal lobbyist for a firm that specializes in nonprofit work.
Can you summarize your duties and responsibilities as county administrator, please?
I'm in charge of the day-to-day operations of the county organization, 500 employees covering the entire county. I report to the elected body, the county council.
Okay. And are you the person in the county who's responsible for deciding whether or not an employee's employment should be terminated?
That's correct.
Okay. And is that under the county personnel ordinance?
That's correct.
Okay. I want to just ask you a little bit about, we heard some testimony about the GPS system while you're here.
Sure.
And we heard about the GPS system being in the various departments in the county and some 40 different vehicles. Do you remember that? What was the criteria that the county used in deciding which vehicles would get GPS systems?
It's my understanding GPSs have been in the county fleet for a number of years. Recent upgrades to our GPS system consisted of every vehicle in the county that is primarily used on the road every single day.
Okay, so the criteria is a vehicle that's on the road on a daily basis?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Were you involved in the investigation of the misconduct by Deputy Sheriff Torres?
Yes, I was.
And what was your role in this investigation?
I oversaw the investigation, made requests of staff, reported to council on the investigation as a personnel matter, and ultimately in collaboration with our staff and legal advice, made the final decision.
Okay. Have you been present for the testimony this morning of Ms. Brewington and Mr. Godwin, correct?
Yes.
And you heard that testimony. Was that the information that you received in the course of the investigation of Mr. Torres's misconduct?
Yes.
Okay. Did you independently look at and review documentation of Mr. Torres's actions and misconduct?
Yes.
And what did you do to independently review those issues?
I reviewed his overtime logs, his daily logs, and cross-referenced that with the GPS reports. And once I noticed that there was a discrepancy, and contacted the sheriff's office, at some point we started the investigation.
Okay, and did you meet with the sheriff's office representatives in connection with the investigation?
Yes, meet with, communicated with, emailed, phone calls, text messages, handwritten letters with the sheriff's office.
Okay, so how many times do you think you had contact with Sheriff Christopher or Chief Deputy Lineweaver concerning this investigation?
I would say, including phone calls, which I don't have documentation, anywhere in the neighborhood from 10 to 15 times, specifically on this issue.
Okay. And you had some personal meetings with Sheriff Christopher concerning this information?
That's correct.
And also with Chief Deputy Lineweaver?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, did they give an explanation as to the discrepancies in the time entries that Mr. Torres was reporting as compared to what were in his daily logs, the GPS and the daily log discrepancies?
They did. We met and conversed a few times, and over the course of our inquiries, and then once I would say the investigation started, a number of responses were given, anywhere from the GPS is broken to the battery's dead to Mr. Torres's primary language is not English, so therefore it takes him longer than others, to they're allowed to go home and wash their cars and clean their equipment, to they were Mr. Torres was visiting a friend or a mechanic on certain roads. We also provided these reports, which they have access to as well, and asked them about specific dates, which has been referenced in the testimony.
Okay. Now, did you at some point reach a preliminary conclusion as to whether or not Mr. Torres should be terminated?
I did.
And the binder, is it SC 2 and 3? Is it that the pre-termination letter?
That's correct.
Okay. And does that summarize the reasons that you felt that you were recommending the dismissal of Mr. Torres?
Yes, it does.
In that audit, first of all, the audit was done over what period of time?
The audit was conducted for February 27th to April 27th, 2 months.
Okay, and during that time, did the GPS report show how much idle time Mr. Torres had total for that eight-week period?
Yeah, we've referenced that before. I think that's 143.12 hours.
Okay. Now, so 143 hours in an eight-week period. Is that right?
Correct.
And am I correct that Mr. Torres was off a week in that time period as well?
That's correct. He took a vacation on 3/12 to 3/16 for 5 days.
Okay, and we also know he had another day of leave that we didn't find out about until later, correct?
That's correct. There was also a Good Friday holiday in there as well.
Right. So we're looking at approximately 265 hours of working time in that two-month period?
Correct.
And of that, 143 hours was idle time?
Correct.
So that's well over half?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, did you inquire into, where Mr. Torres was going when he had this idle time?
Where he was going?
Where he was. Where he was. The locations he was frequenting.
I did. When we ran these reports and brought this to Mr. Lineweaver and Mr. Christopher's attention, specific addresses, which we've gone over already, appeared again and again and again. And those were the ones we focused on to see exactly what was going on within those addresses. We already knew, and it was explained to us, that idle time within these vehicles is a normal course of business. They have computers inside. They have to keep it running to keep it working. They do work inside the vehicle. That is their mobile office. So we understand that idle time is part of their normal duties. It's just in 2 months' worth of time, when you spend more than half of that time idling, we have to look into that.
Okay. And did you also review the amount of overtime that was being submitted by Mr. Torres?
That's correct. I see the overtime slips that the sheriff's office submits from the to the HR department.
And in comparison to other employees in the sheriff's department, how much overtime has Mr. Torres put in for in comparison to every other deputy?
Yeah, as we've alluded to, depending on if you're talking about Chief Deputy Lineweaver, who runs the office, he put in nearly five times as much. And then his counterpart, Mr. Wilson or Mrs. Smith, nearly six times as much overtime.
Were you concerned about falsification of documentation by the fact that the daily logs he submitted, which are official records of where he was serving papers, did not jibe with the GPS reports?
Yeah, I was concerned. I would say that was a focus of the entire investigation. When speaking to Dennis, I know that the deputy was working. I know that he was out there, but we didn't have the details of his particular work. And once we started looking into it, that really drew our attention and concern.
Mm-hmm. You heard the testimony about Wilson Hill Road location?
Yes.
Okay. Did you follow up to find out why he was going there to satisfy yourself if there was some legitimate reason for that?
Yes. As again alluded to, Mr. Godwin and Ms. Brewington looked into the specific location in their course of investigation. Those were some of the highlighted addresses that we inquired about to Mr. Lineweaver and Mr. Christopher when we met on our initial May 3rd meeting. Again, the May 3rd meeting was specific to some of the activities that we were seeing, including these frequent addresses that he was visiting.
Did you follow up on the allegation that the GPS system was not working properly?
Yes, I was the one that instructed Mr. Godwin to do the ride-along with the specific car that we were reading the reports from, and then I also asked for the follow-up system test where they took another vehicle out and tested the computer system to make sure that what was being reported on that particular vehicle matched the system reports that our computer was showing.
Okay. Based on the information you had, did you reach a conclusion as to whether or not Mr. Torres should be terminated?
I did. Based on the information provided, the testimony that was given to me by Chief Deputy Lyon Weaver and Sheriff Christopher, along with Mr. Torres, we determined, as cited in my letter, that he should be terminated.
Okay. Now, before doing that, did you have a pre-termination hearing with Mr. Torres?
Yes, May 18th.
Okay, and did Mr. Torres appear?
He did.
Okay, what happened at that meeting?
It was informal. We met right in the caucus room, and I just opened the meeting up by saying this is an informal hearing that's required, or meeting that's required. It's his opportunity to tell his side of the story. By that time, he had already received the May 16th letter, and he read his statement, which has been cited earlier. And then we asked for a copy of the statement, which he provided, along with his response letter, which then brought us to today. Mm-hmm.
Did you consult with the department head, Sheriff Christopher, prior to terminating Mr. Torres?
I did, and Chief Deputy Lyon Weaver, like I said, a number of times that led to termination. We spoke, emailed, letters, or even text messages with Mr. Lyon Weaver.
Now, the termination letter is SC 9 through 11, is that correct?
Yes.
Can I ask you to turn to that?
Yes.
SC 9 through 11.
Thank you.
Does that letter accurately summarize the reasons for your decision to dismiss Mr. Torres?
It does.
Okay, and what were those reasons?
The three reasons we recommended dismissal was misconduct by misappropriation of overtime, falsification of documentation, and abuse of county time and equipment.
Okay, and did you summarize in there the background information as well as the responses that had been given on Mr. Torres' behalf?
I did.
Okay, based on all the information that you've had then, that you've had now, that you've heard today thus far, are you comfortable that you made the correct decision in terminating Mr. Torres?
Yes, I am.
And you're the person who's charged with that responsibility in the county?
Yes, I am.
So I have.
Thank you. Ms. Murray?
One thing I do want to point out before I actually begin questioning is that the report that was just furnished is not actually the same time period that we were talking about. The original report that I asked about was February 27th to March 27th. This is a different time period of April 2nd to May 2nd.
I said that on the record when I brought the document out.
Thank you. Missed it.
I can reference that, too. I'm the one that pulled the document right there. And the network fleet won't allow me to do it beyond 3 months, so that's just why I pulled that time frame. Just so, for reference, you could see the column that says closest landmark.
Okay. My apologies for missing that when you introduced it into the record. Did you personally conduct? I know that you said you oversaw part of it. You personally conducted part of the investigation.
I was personally involved. Yes.
Okay. I have in front of me an article entitled Fired Deputy Requests Public Grievance Hearing. I believe it's T1 in the packets, and it's actually from last Friday. And there's a quote where you said that, it says, Lawson said the board has two options following the hearing. It can make a recommendation or defer and schedule another public hearing to render a decision to county administration, end quote. Section 2915F of the Sussex County Code states that if the board finds action was based on political, religious, or racial prejudice, or that the administrator failed to follow proper procedure outlined in subsection C, the employee shall be reinstated to his former position without loss of pay. But that's not what you told the Cape Gazette. Why?
I doubt a quote in the Cape Gazette is binding.
I'm not suggesting it is binding. Are you saying that they misquoted you?
I'm saying that Ron MacArthur called me and asked a question, and I said my understanding of the process is such, and that's it.
Okay. So let's look at subsection C, which states that a permanent employee may be dismissed or demoted whenever in the judgment of the administrator, after consultation with the department head, the employee's worker misconduct so warrants. You've testified that you consulted with Sheriff Christopher, correct?
And Dennis Lineweaver.
Okay. Well, but we're talking about the department head here, so that would be Sheriff Christopher, although he is a duly elected official. So did you, what do you consider consulting?
Anything from phone calls to emails to letters to memos.
Okay. And you did say in your termination letter that there were numerous meetings and phone conversations and email correspondence. And it looked like you had details there because you were able to count them. Numerous meetings. I know of one with Sheriff Christopher, and it was on May 3rd.
That's correct.
Okay. And there's one with Sheriff, there's two with Dennis Lineweaver. That's numerous, okay. The phone calls and emails, you said you don't have record of the phone calls, correct? But you do have emails?
Yes.
Okay. And I saw one of those for the first time this morning, which was April 27th. But give me, you were counting texts and things like that. Give me an idea on the emails. And who were the emails directed to?
Well, I actually have just some of the examples. Most of them were directed to Dennis because he runs the office. He's okay. There day to day.
But there's a very important point here. And the very important point is consulting with the department head. And Sheriff Christopher runs the sheriff's office.
I consulted with him.
Pardon me?
I consulted with him.
How?
I included him on emails. I spoke to Dennis as he spoke to Sheriff Christopher, and we had phone conversation on May 16th.
Well, I guess here's my query. It's, it would seem that it would be standard procedure on something as serious as terminating an employee that you would provide details. And what I'm hearing is lots of phone calls, lots of text messages, some emails, and that in the case where you are terminating an employee against the wishes of the direct supervisor, that would be particularly important.
Okay.
Do you agree?
I hear what you're saying.
Okay.
I know
okay.
what I did, and I'm okay with what I did.
All right. So for the next couple of questions, you're going to need your May 16th pre-termination letter and your May 22nd termination letter. So SC2 to SC4 and SC9 to SC11. Let's look at the May 16th pre-termination letter, page 2, third paragraph, about halfway down, when you're talking about the visits to 13706 Wilson Hill Road. When Chief Deputy Dennis Lineweaver and Sheriff Jeff Christopher were questioned about why you visited there frequently, it was stated that you told them that you were visiting a friend who was a mechanic to look at your county vehicle for an alternator problem. Direct quote. Okay, so now I want to direct your attention to the May 22nd termination letter. Page 3, paragraph 3, where you're talking about the 143.12 hours of idle time, including 4.1 hours at 13706 Wilson Hill Road. The last two sentences you state, I find the reasons stated by Sheriff Christopher and Chief Deputy Lineweaver that you were visiting a mechanic at Wilson Hill Road to be unfounded. So which is it? In the pre-termination letter, you're saying he saw a mechanic, and in the termination letter, you're saying that you find it unfounded.
I believe he was on Wilson Hill Road.
Excuse me?
I believe he was on Wilson Hill Road, and okay. He was idling at Wilson Hill Road. The reasons given for the amount of time spent at Wilson Hill Road, with or without a mechanic, is unfounded. And I found the reasons given by both the sheriff and the chief deputy as unfounded.
Okay. Well, if it's unfounded, then you had a quote in there in your pre-termination letter about speaking with the mechanic who has a repair shop. So you're saying that even though you talked to, or not you personally, but that someone from the county spoke to the mechanic next door, that was, it was unfounded that he had seen a mechanic. You couldn't prove that, correct?
Excuse me?
Here's my question. If he, do you think he saw a mechanic?
At the Wilson Hill Road? Mm-hmm. I'm unsure. I don't know.
Okay. Then.
Oh, mechanic lives in the residence near where he was.
Then what is the count of abuse of county equipment?
What is the account of abuse?
What is, what he, there's a charge here of abuse of county equipment. If it's unfounded, whether he went to, that he went to a mechanic, how can there be a charge of abuse of county equipment?
It's unfounded that I don't know whether or not he was visiting the mechanic or not. So that's, I don't know that. Number two, if he was visiting a mechanic, that's against county policy. That's abuse of equipment and time. And number three, the amount of time he spent in that area on Wilson Hill Road was abuse of county time and equipment. So pick your choice, one, two, or three.
Interesting.
And as far as I know, if he was visiting a mechanic and the car was idling, I don't know how you fix an alternator with the car running. So if he was there visiting a mechanic, getting the alternator fixed, mm-hmm. I don't know how you do that for hours upon hours of time.
Hours upon hours? The termination letter says, what, 4.1 hours?
4.1 hours is hours.
Okay. Okay, yes, it is. You're correct. And he did see Chris Malik. And, you know, Mr. Malik is no longer here because this is, he had to go to, he had other plans this afternoon that he had to take care of. So we're going to have to deal with that. In truth, he went to see his friend for diagnosis of the car. He has never said that he had his friend fix his car.
And when asked, we couldn't get a straight answer about why he didn't go to the mechanic. Didn't. That car is owned by the county taxpayers.
Uh-huh.
That car should have been fixed by a county mechanic.
Well, and it
we don't
was
authorize,
fixed by a county mechanic.
It was analyzed by a non-county employee, which is against policy.
Actually, the policy says it shouldn't be worked on, doesn't it?
Either way.
Analysis is not working on it.
You're splitting words.
Well.
You know what I mean.
Okay. I have another question on the May 22nd termination letter. Page 2, bottom of the page. It's where you're talking about the ride-along that Hal Godwin did. And you say April 30th, he does the ride-along, and that it proved that it was functioning properly. And on May 11th, he did a second test of another sheriff's vehicle, and that it was, it also showed. What I'm interested in is the top of the next page. These tests proved, number one, that the GPS system on the county vehicle you drove during the time period of February 27th, 2012 to April 27th was functioning properly.
Mm-hmm.
A test on April 30th proves that the 2 months prior it was functioning properly. How?
The reports that we received and analyzed were accurate when they were produced. That was verified by the test that was done on April 30th, and then the test that was done before that on the vehicle that was driven, and followed up by an affidavit by Network Fleets that said, when that GPS system sends a signal to their computer system, that report is accurate.
And these are the reports that we were just discussing with Mr. Godwin, where I have two activity detail reports, one that says closest residence and the other one that does not say closest residence. That's the reports that you're referring to?
Those are the exact reports, and I can explain. As administrator of the account, you can add landmarks onto the software. So there are several landmarks for many employees, including their homes, so that when a vehicle gets near a home, it triggers an alert, and it sends it to their boss, and the boss says, why are you at home at 1 o'clock when you're supposed to be doing an assessment? That is a tool that the software allows. I entered Torres Home, DE246, whatever the number is, myself. If a report was produced before that landmark was entered into the software, it wouldn't show up. But if the report was generated after that, it would show up. And we ended up putting a couple of different landmarks in the reports to show when a vehicle was near a landmark.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting point. February 27th, when I had the GPS report, said closest landmark, Torres Home. And then March 2nd, let me make sure I'm correct here. So that's afterward. Does not have the landmark. And then
you'll have to tell me the numbers you're looking at.
Okay, let's do that. Hang on. SC85. Closest landmark, Torres Home.
Right.
Correct?
It. Yep.
All right. March 2nd, so SC 125.
Okay,
the top of it, the 19239 DE246, yeah. On the earlier report, that's the one that's identified as closest landmark to Torres Home.
Correct.
Okay. So didn't you just say that once the landmark was entered, you know, so if the landmark was entered in, the later reports would show the landmark, but the reports before it would not?
You're absolutely correct. Let me explain. If you notice 85 on the bottom, there's a thing called a footer.
Yep.
Networkfleet.com, printed 5/23/2012.
Okay.
That report was generated and printed on 5/23/2012. So SC 85 was produced and printed that date. 125, it doesn't have a footer. We don't know when this was produced or printed, so therefore we don't know if it was or was not before I entered in the closest landmark. I would guarantee you, if we went back and asked Network Fleet when that landmark was put in, it was after this was printed. You have to understand, myself, Hal Godwin, Karen Brewington, we all have access to the administrator's rights to this system, meaning we can see the entire fleet.
Okay.
So this report that's in here could have been generated by any of us. And if Karen has "you can't print footer" on your website, then it would have printed without it. If I have it on, then it would have printed with.
When you testified, you said that when you were notified on May 3rd about the GPS issues, that you looked into the report that there was a problem with the GPS. And in fact, what you said was that you scheduled a ride-along with Hal Godwin.
No, I asked Hal to look into the vehicle itself to make sure that what his testimony explained.
Okay, so because Hal actually did the ride-along on April 30th. And then on May 3rd, the discrepancy. So when you were told that by Sheriff Christopher and Dennis Lineweaver that they thought the GPS was wrong, what I need you to tell me again, what did you do in response to that?
Yeah, let's back up. So when I looked into this originally, probably back in, well, it was triggered in March 27th to be specific, since you want to know the dates. March 27th was the council meeting. I looked into it. 2 weeks later, I got the overtime report, which triggered my review of the overtime report and the GPS. I called Dennis on April 24th, and then I wrote him a letter that says, same date, April 24th. Thanks for your help. Per our conversation, Deputy Torres requested 4 hours of overtime, yet our records indicate he did not work the hours submitted. Please see attached GPS reports for his vehicle. Note, the vehicle is not turned on until 9:45 a.m., yet his request for overtime states an 8 a.m. start. The vehicle returned to the location at or near his home address outside of Georgetown, and the vehicle remained idling there for 1 hour and 21 minutes. Please let me know what you determine. At this point, I'm not inclined to approve this overtime request and want to question Torres for the information submitted.
What was the date of that?
That was 4/24.
Okay.
And then, same date, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Dennis emails me back with Jeff on it. Hello, Todd. I looked into the Torres overtime. I interviewed him. He explained the course of the day in detail. It appears he did work the entire day. So going back to well before the May 3rd meeting, we were taking a look at the logs and the GPS reports. And then I've got additional emails that I pulled that show we discussed this, some of which we entered into the record earlier.
How many other county employees have been terminated without letting their department head know?
I've never fired a county employee in my 6 months I've been here.
Okay. And You had the meeting with Sheriff Christopher on the 3rd. Did you notify Sheriff Christopher that you were considering termination?
On May 3rd, no.
Okay, after that.
I don't think we notified anyone that we were considering termination. We were looking into these reports. I think it was clear that an investigation was taking place based on the fact that myself, I was talking to Dennis, Karen was interviewing or trying to interview the staff and Mr. Torres specifically. It's hard to conduct an investigation when your director tells you not to discuss matters unless he's there. So stating whether or not we were going to terminate, I think that would be a little premature.
Okay, but wouldn't you agree that since you were going in that direction, if you were going to move toward either issuing a warning, a reprimand, or a termination, that it would be appropriate to speak to the department head?
I wouldn't agree with your statement. You said that I was going in that direction. At that point, no decision was made of whether or not we were going in any direction. I was looking for explanations. I was looking for answers. I wanted to know why the car was sitting at someone's house for hours, 4 hours on end, with no explanation. That's a county car with county gas and a county employee. I wanted some answers.
I understand that. And then you didn't get the answers.
That's correct.
And then
the answers we got were unsubstantiated.
Okay, well, that's important. What do you mean they were unsubstantiated? I mean, well, and here's my point.
The fact... Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, actually.
The reasons that were given by Sheriff Christopher in the meetings that I attended or was reported to me afterwards, or the reasons given by Chief Deputy Lineweaver, I found, again, to be unfounded.
How did you find them to be unfounded?
I think that a reason why someone sits in their driveway for hours purported to do work because he's, quote, slow, unquote, is unsubstantiated.
But didn't you testify earlier that their cars are their offices? That their laptops are in their cars?
I did.
Okay.
And I agree to that.
Okay, so...
There's no other deputies that sit in their driveways for 4 hours. None. And I'm saying 4 hours. We only looked at 2 months' worth of time. If we went back for the whole year, I don't know what we'd see. I know at the same time we cross-reference the other deputies. They may sit in their driveways at tops an hour, before or after work, because they're either starting, preparing, or they're finishing up. They're not sitting in their driveway for hours, and they're not returning home in the middle of the day and sitting in their driveways for hours.
That's what the GPS reports say. The returns that I, when were you were here when I was talking to Ms. Brewington about documenting, actually verifying these daily work logs.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And that, I obviously, it's a very random sample. It was only 3 days. But that it, the work was getting done.
I don't know that.
Okay. But you didn't check.
I asked. I checked to see whether or not he was going to the locations that he was going to. All I got was his mother's house, his kid's school, his friend on Wilson Hill Road.
When you say you checked how?
I checked the GPSs. And then I handed the GPSs over to their direct boss, the sheriff and the chief deputy, and I got no answers. What else do you want me to do?
Well, that's an investigation. I have no problem with doing an investigation. My issue is with once you decided that you were going to move to termination, you did not talk to Sheriff Christopher about it. And I want to understand why. The code says consult with the department head.
Mm-hmm. And I say I did.
Okay, but I'm, you know, okay, then I'm saying you didn't. Because I do not think that emails and stuff, you know, 3 weeks before, when you make that move, when you decide that you're going to terminate somebody, what is wrong with talking to the department head about it and saying, you know, giving him a phone call or setting up a meeting and saying to him, I'm not liking what I'm seeing here, I'm not getting the answers, and I'm going to move toward termination. Why not have that conversation?
That's what was discussed in the meetings that we had leading up to.
You're missing my point. My point is you went from investigation to I'm going to terminate, and you had no conversation with Sheriff Christopher about that.
I don't agree.
You are the ultimate decision maker, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So basically, is this a scenario where you made the decision? It's yours. Don't have to check. It's yours.
I would not agree with that statement, that I do not have to check.
Okay. Who do you have to check with?
My legal counsel, my HR director, my fleet director.
Do you have to get approval from anybody?
No.
Okay. So you are the final decision maker.
Yes.
Who do you answer to?
5 elected officials.
Okay. Sheriff's an elected official.
Correct.
Do you answer to him?
I do not.
Okay. So you take your marching orders from the Sussex County Council?
That's correct.
Okay. Were you ordered to terminate Deputy Torres?
Absolutely not.
Okay. One last question, and it's a point of concern for me, is the House Bill 283. Well, it's passed the House. It's held up in the Senate. Are you familiar with it?
283. Yes.
Okay. What are the provisions of it?
It attempts to amend Delaware Code involving Sussex County personnel.
And what specifically?
I don't know the specific code by...
No. I mean, just what's the general gist of what 283 is about?
It's about amending Delaware Code involving Sussex County personnel.
It's about removing the public notice function of the personnel policies, and it's about putting the discretion 100% in your hands.
I would disagree. Still requires county council review, county council approval.
Okay. So, all right.
And we're talking about proposed legislation.
Yes, we are. And it passed the House, and it's held up in the Senate because Senator Peterson actually has concerns about the public, particularly the employees, not having a voice in what happens. So that's kind of where we are.
Right.
And on 283, you guys already have control of the other departments in the county, correct?
I don't know what that means.
I'll just ask it point blank. Are you trying to usurp the role of the constitutional officers? Here's where I'm going. You did not check with Sheriff, you did not consult with Sheriff Christopher when you decided you were going to terminate.
You see it one way, I see it another way.
Okay.
That's what you get paid to do. I disagree.
Okay. I have no further questions at this point.
Okay. We've had a lot of argument by counsel here. Let's go back and let's focus on the facts instead of her arguments. May 3rd, that's a date, is it not, when you personally met with and consulted with Sheriff Christopher concerning the facts that were under investigation. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And Sheriff Christopher, who's here, he was personally there, personally with you, and you consulted with him, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, now, after that time, I'm going to give you, if you would like to have a copy of it, Ms. Brewington had sent Mr. Christopher an email asking to meet with him about these issues. Can I approach and give that to you?
Please.
What's the date of that email?
May 9th.
Okay, so can you read us that into the record, please?
Sure. It's an email from Karen Brewington to Jeff Christopher, CC Todd Lawson. Subject, meeting, Torres Daily Logs Timesheets, 12:27 p.m., May 9th, 2012. Jeff, I spoke to Dennis this morning in regards to Torres's daily logs. that he provided me yesterday. Dennis stated that you had advised him not to answer any questions that we have in regards to Torres time and that you would address our questions. Todd and I are requesting a meeting with you at this time to discuss the concerns we have. Please let me know if you're available tomorrow. Thanks, Karen.
Okay, and did you get a communication back from Sheriff Christopher about whether he would meet with you and Ms. Brewington concerning the concerns you had about Mr. Torres's work and performance?
I did not personally get a response. I believe Karen got a phone call.
And you heard her testify about that phone call this morning?
That's correct.
And what did the sheriff say about whether or not he would meet with you and Ms. Brewington in response to that communication to discuss the concerns about Mr. Torres's work and performance?
Sheriff Christopher refused to meet with us.
All right. And you obviously met with him on May 3rd, and you had multiple other communications you've talked about. Do you believe you consulted with him as required by the county code?
Absolutely, I do.
And the county code doesn't have any provision. It gives him a veto power over the administrator's decision with respect to whether or not an employee's work or performance warrants dismissal, does it?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, thank you.
Does the board have any questions for Mr. Lawson?
No.
Yeah.
Mr. Willoughby, your next witness.
We would reserve the right to call Mr. Torres if he is not called by his counsel. But other than that, we will rest.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Murray?
May we take a break?
Sure. 5-minute break?
That would be great.
We need to have a motion if we do so.
Like a motion for a 5-minute break?
Motion to recess for 5 minutes.
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Okay. Take a recess for 5 minutes.